I'd like to welcome everyone to this morning's City Council study session for Thursday, March 3rd, 2011. The first item on the agenda is to review the agenda for the upcoming City Council meeting. So we begin with items 3A through 3D. Items 4A through 6A. Items 7 through 8A.
We're a tidge behind you.
You're a tidge behind me?
Oh, I'm good.
What is a tidge?
Bigger than a smidge. It's smaller than a
scotch. A smidge and a scotch.
Yeah, that's it. Okay. Alex looks like he was a tidge behind you. I know. Me too. I'm buying myself some time here, blaming it on you.
So you're saying the paper is faster than the computer?
This morning.
Okay.
No, it's the operator.
So we're at 7. Is that right?
Everything's on the table now.
I want to even make sure I'm on the right agenda.
But on delete.
Oh, yeah. This is for March 7th.
Yeah, I think I'm there. One momento. Yes. So on delinquent accounts, I think that's number 7. I just had a couple quick questions.
Number 7.
And I ask this every time. Is there anything we could be doing more to address, like under utilities, any policy decisions? Do we need to get higher, these write-offs when you see so much money, you know, being written off? Even though percentage-wise it's very small comparatively, I just hate to see those dollars get written off.
Continue to work with that council member, and there are things that periodically we think of that we try, but overall it is part of operating a business where we are extending credit. We try to minimize it. We make sure that we are sending things to an outside collection agency at the end of the process so that can be reported against a customer's credit rating, and hopefully that will incentivize them to come back and make good with us. But also, when they do come back to the city of Mesa, and a lot of these folks do, their account still stands on the system. So if they come back and try and establish utility services with us, we do pick them up and make them get us current.
Right. And Ed, you also look at if they come back for, we've also tried to broaden that, so they come back for any type of transaction with the city.
Yes.
So it's not just reconnecting, but it could be coming and getting a sales tax license or
that's correct.
Anything
the,
else?
The policy or the section of the city code that the council passed last fall does allow us then to withhold permits, licenses, anything of that nature if we match up that they owe an outstanding debt to the city.
And that was my follow-up. We've given you some tools, and hopefully
absolutely.
We can model that and see how that works. Or,
yes.
And we always do a comparison to SRP and other folks to make sure that our practices are in line with what they
yes,
do.
Yes, we do. And also, you know, again, we do take into account as we budget our revenues that some of the revenues due us will be uncollectible, just as anyone else would do.
Right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
What's that? Oh, go ahead, Councilor. That other stuff? Oh, okay. What percentage of accounts do we factor in as being uncollectible?
Into the budget? Or it just what has our history been?
Well, I'm assuming that we budget based on our history.
Okay.
So.
Our last 12-month total for utility sales tax and miscellaneous is 0.68%.
Okay.
So less than a half a percent.
All right, so even though it's a big number, we're running big numbers through there. So.
That's correct.
Okay. All right, Councilmember Higgins.
I have a question on item 4A as an apple. And it was just typically you on the staff report show the second, the third, the fourth bidders and their amounts. And in this case, you just didn't. So I just wondered.
This is a renewal. The contract was actually awarded, and that analysis was actually done 3 years ago.
Got it. Excellent. And on 4C... you showed a little chart on, you know, how you pick this bidder.
Yes.
With numbers, you know, all that stuff, different criteria. Does each of those criteria have a sheet that goes along with it that has objective measurements to it?
Rely on my help here.
Mayor Smith, Councilmember Higgins.
Evaluation criteria is listed in the solicitation, so the vendors know what they are. And then there's a point system allotted to this, although in this particular solicitation, I believe the points were left off of it.
No, yeah. Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, that's for the evaluation committee, but are you talking about what the solicitor, what the vendor sees?
I guess I'm asking how, you know, here's this little chart. You've assigned points to different categories. Is it arbitrary, or do you have another set of criteria that says if you're in this ballpark, you get a 200. If you're doing this, you're at 157. Because it was kind of, you know, most things were like even numbers on that chart, 100, 200. And then all of a sudden it's 185. And, you know, it's just.
Well, it's subjective, but it depends. It's entirely up to the evaluation committee members. And, of course, they go on the response that the vendors send. As far as the points total goes, we generally arrive at those, you know, for each evaluation criteria, we generally arrive at those between the purchasing staff, the buyer, and the administrators at the RC that the product is for.
Speaking Mesa language, RCs is a bureaucratic term. What does that mean?
The end user department.
Okay. So you would have, in this case, individuals from Catherine Sorensen's Water Resources would be sitting on this committee.
Yes, sir.
And they would be helping to evaluate whether or not, which equipment they think could perform best for their needs.
Yes, that's exactly right.
So back to the original question.
Okay.
There's not a set of criteria for your committee to use to assign points. It's kind of subjective.
Yes.
Based on each category.
Yes, yes, it is. No, there's not. I'm sorry. There's not a set amount of points. Each proposal is different. Proposal has different points.
Councilmember, to answer your question, yes, it is subjective within these categories. So they look at qualifications, abilities, experience, expertise, and they look at the three proposals, and they determine how many points out of that 300 possible are assigned to each vendor.
But each category is given a specific point.
Correct.
And then you make the evaluation for each one of those categories.
Correct.
Yes. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Councilmember. On my agenda, mine is labeled as 4D. I didn't realize you were talking about mine. I'm sorry. So that's why I just came up. But and these are very important pumps to the city. So we felt that it was really important to get not only the best price but the right qualifications. Okay.
And I will point out that in this instance, it did work out that they were the highest scored,
right,
as well as the lowest cost, and they are a Mesa business. Good package.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anything else on the agenda? All right. Next item is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide directions on the ever-present hotel-motel ordinance.
I thought this was the first time here.
I just kept singing that song. How everything goes.
The song about hotel motels?
Yeah, that hotel motel song.
No?
No?
Morning, Mayor, Council.
Welcome back. We left the light on for you.
and there's a vacancy. Well, real briefly, we'll give a quick background on where we started and then go to where we are right now. As you all know, the Public Safety Committee requested that we look at and research the possibility of a hotel-motel ordinance in the city of Mesa. At that time, we had nothing on the books to refer to. So what we did as a police department is we researched not only Valley ordinances, but we researched nationwide ordinances, best practices, things like that, to see where we wanted to go and receive some direction. At the same time, what we recognized and what we also did very early on is met with the members of the industry. And while we had bullet points from best practices to present to the industry, those bullet points received were very contentious at the very beginning because there was a whole lot of bullet points. So keeping in mind that tourism and safety in the city of Mesa is extremely important and looking at the overall picture, the industry and the police department decided to set up a subcommittee and meet on a regular basis, bad ideas back and forth and come to a concurrence for the betterment of both. And again, keeping in mind that currently we don't have an ordinance, and we all felt that an ordinance was in the best interest of the city. On November 18th, as you all well know, we presented the ordinance to you, provided some direction, or asked for some direction. There was a couple outstanding issues at that time. One was the discussion as to whether we wanted a review board for the industry to have, and what its role might or might not be. And we also wanted to talk about limiting the burden on the industry, the hotel motel industry, as much as possible, but still provide the public safety and reduce calls for service to the police department. The basics of the ordinance are really quite simple right now. You have three ways to identify yourself. A pre-approved identification program, a credit card, and when you serve, or that's number one. Number two is the credit card, which most practices we discovered require a photo identification when you use the credit card. And then obviously the third way is a cash customer. In the past, we've had no way to document who really is the cash customer, and that's kind of the concern right there. That is probably the best item that we can concentrate on for the ordinance itself. And then lastly, the last thing that the basic of the ordinance is to require the industry, the hotels and motels, to provide the registration upon a police asking for the registration at what we've all bantered about as a reasonable time to come in and ask for the registration forms that they have. The violations will be civil penalties rather than criminal would be civil penalties versus criminal penalties. We believe that encourages voluntary compliance. Some of the changes that we did come up with, as you sent us back to look at these things, we will no longer require the date of birth for the registrant. Safety issues and concerns that the people who rent rooms don't want their information out there for violation of privacy. We understand those things. We worked on if you're a cash customer, giving them an either or, which would be a date of birth or an age. And at that point, if you're writing it down on paper, they can write it down on paper. If they have their computerized systems, they can still, in the comments section, write the age. They all agreed that that would not be an undue hardship or anything like that. We also changed the retention from 1 year to 30 days. We believe that, for the most part, 30 days is long enough for us to help with our crime-fighting abilities. If we need to reach out longer than a 30-day time frame, we have other avenues to do that. The hotel motel board requirement has been removed. We talked with the industry members. They no longer desire that board to have a role. There's an ad hoc thing in place anyway. Mr. Brinton with the Convention and Visitors Bureau has been very helpful. We have a very good dialogue and relationship with them. And we believe that we can do virtually the same thing without having an actual formal board to do something like that. And then we ask, most ordinances go into play within 30 days. We're asking for a 90-day time frame so that we can put together some training for not just the police department, but also the hotel motel industry, teaching everybody and giving them the simplicities of the new ordinance if you decided to give us the direction to go forward with this. So the anticipated benefits, just to recap that, as we told you before, reduce calls for service. We also believe that we'll reduce Part 1 crime and Part 2 crime. Discourage career criminals from utilizing the rooms to conduct their criminal activity. Allow the hotel-motel industry itself to self-regulate, because the dialogue that we have set up right now, we will be giving them monthly reports so that they will know where each and every motel sits as far as six major categories. and it allows the hotel motel industry customers and community members to be greatly encouraged by the fact that their properties are going to be the safest in the valley. So with that said, once again, we request that the council approve direction for us to go and with the writing of the ordinance.
Okay, Councilman Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I want to compliment the working group from the hotel motel industry, the city attorney's office, and police department for the work that's been done on this. I think that what we hear today is that you've kept your eyes on the prize, and the goal is to improve public safety for the staff and guests of the hotels as well as the public, but at the same time add to your toolbox in terms of crime fighting, both crime prevention and criminal apprehension. And I think the changes that you've made have simplified the process, hopefully taken some of the uncertainty out and the mystery out that accompanied the first draft a year ago. And I think it's come a long way. I think the changes are reasonable, both from the city perspective and the industry perspective. And I also like the idea of the delayed effective date, again, to answer questions and assist in training of the hotel and motel employees. But I think the end result is going to be a positive one for the community. And I know that the Public Safety Committee is going to would like to continue to work very closely with you in the industry to monitor how it works. But I would hope that the council would concur and move it forward. But I wanted to compliment everybody involved for simplifying the process, but maintaining your focus on what the whole purpose of this exercise was.
Thank you, council member, and we appreciate the support, too.
Thank you. Vice Mayor?
I'd like to concur with those comments and thank you for all your hard work. This has not been an easy one, but I also want to extend my appreciation to the industry who stepped up, and while they had some initially had some trepidations on this, realized the importance of their industry to Mesa. I mean, the mayor's heat initiative, the T, stands for tourism. And we generate revenue off of bed taxes. And a lot of economic activity comes through filling those rooms, particularly right now, where we have a lot of folks coming in for the Cubs games. And if our tourism industry doesn't have the best reputation out there because of criminal activities that are going on, then that's going to create problems for the city, but the industry as well. We aren't going to see the new hotel rooms that we're going to need as the new Cubs stadium's built. I'm also encouraged when we hired our new chief of police that he came from Phoenix, and they have a similar ordinance there, and demonstrated how successfully his organization there, while he was there, was able to use an ordinance like this to catch some pretty serious felons throughout time. So we know that these things work. I hope that we continue to evaluate this as we move through, say, in the next year or so, like we did with the massage parlor ordinance that's come back up with a few changes, and tweak the ordinance as we go along to make sure that it is effective and not just something that's on the book. So this is a good first step. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Vice Mayor, and I believe we do have the evaluation tools in place to do exactly what you said.
Great. Okay. Any other questions, comments? Great. Thank you. I guess the direction then is you're looking for directions to whether to proceed or not with based on what's been presented.
If council is comfortable, and the city attorney indicates the ordinance is drafted, we could put this on the agenda for Monday. That's you're comfortable with that?
Everybody? Yes, sir.
Alfred, okay. You wrote it.
All right, I see a bunch of nods, so I think you have your direction. Okay. Let's go ahead and do that.
Place it on these.
Okay.
Okay. Great. Robert, are you okay with that?
Thank you.
Robert's nodding.
Yes, let the record note that Robert did nod.
You waved with all the five fingers.
Okay. I'm telling myself, maintain dignity. For once in your life, maintain dignity. Next item on the agenda is hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the planned area development overlay for the Falcon Field area.
I'm not a council member, but I did stay in a Holiday Inn Express last night.
Oh.
I was looking for an opportunity to say that, but it just wasn't presenting itself well.
Did they ask you for your date of birth?
3568.
Okay.
Coming up.
Okay.
Saturday.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm Jim Law, the acting director at Falcon Field Airport, and with me this morning is...
Well, welcome. I think this is the first time, the opportunity you've had in your position.
Good morning. I'm Laura Heineman with the Development and Sustainability Department. I'm a special projects manager. Together over some time now, our departments have been working in conjunction to prepare a draft planned area development overlay document for Falcon Field. Our purpose here this morning is to make you aware of those efforts and to receive council direction regarding moving forward with the full PAD process. And as you're probably well aware, in 2010, Falcon Field was named Airport of the Year by their Aeronautics Division of ADOT, as well as receiving a safety award for Safe Airport by another group. Both of these awards point to the city's commitment to lifting the vision of Falcon Field to an even higher level. We believe that a carefully designed and implemented planned area development overlay is a necessary step towards attaining that goal. Some background on Falcon Field. This marks the 70th year anniversary that Falcon Field was established as a training field for British and American World War II pilots. Falcon Field is a general aviation reliever airport for both Sky Harbor and Phoenix Mesa Gateway airports. The airport supports a thriving business community as well as many recreational pilots. We have implemented a fly-friendly program to ensure that the airport is a good neighbor to the surrounding community. And while the city has approved and adopted an airport master plan and a Falcon Field subarea plan, both critical documents, neither give specific development guidelines for the airport. That's why we feel a PAD is warranted. There are specific development challenges that currently exist for airport developers when they come to Falcon Field. Among those is the fact that the current zoning code development do not anticipate the unique needs of large aircraft hangars and the additional need for staging area for aircraft and maneuvering of aircraft. In addition, the current landscaping requirements in the city ordinance requires foundation-based landscaping even on the air side of a building on the airport. So the first thing a developer has to do is come in and go through a zoning variance process, which is somewhat punitive for the developers. So this will help take care of some of those issues.
Could I just clarify?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's actually a board of adjustment case.
Still a variance.
Yes. Well, okay. He said planning and zoning. Oh. I just want to make sure.
I stand corrected.
No. Minor, but.
No.
Whatever it is, this is one of those well-intentioned items that when you look at it is really.
Understood.
I'm trying to be nice on this. Quite silly.
And
has that ever been used in the records? Quite silly. Would you run a search on that? A legal term of art. Term of art. Well, I mean, no. The ridiculous thing is, and I know we came up with this with the paint facility there, where you actually have a facility that is completely surrounded by ramp space and everything, where you absolutely cannot put landscaping, and you wouldn't want to if you could, because it's basically adjacent to taxiways and things like that and ramp space, and yet our code requires that they put in landscaping. So
yeah,
it's just one of those. Yeah, so. Okay.
Exactly.
Summers, we'll explain that afterwards.
Combined with that, too, are some setback requirements in the current zoning requirements. That
I would like you to explain a little bit, because I'm not quite clear as to the anticipate large hangars and maneuvering areas. What specific?
Currently, our requirement for any developer coming in to sign a new lease with the city, we require a staging area equal to the size of the aircraft hangar that they plan to build. So that you start adding in parking requirements, the hangar itself, and the staging area, we call it, you start eating up a lot of that parcel very quickly. We require that because if we don't anticipate that need for the developer to stage his aircraft, they end up on the ramp space and start providing conflict with aircraft trying to make it by their certain parcel. So that is a requirement that we currently have for a developer that
okay,
they provide.
Okay, so how would you be changing that? What do you anticipate on that?
We would not. We would capture that within the PAD. Currently, okay. It's not in the zoning.
You do it on a use specific and on a proposed development and proposed use.
Exactly.
Because those vary.
That is true.
And so rather than establish one set of standards which may fit some of the proposed projects, they don't really accommodate the unique nature of all projects. Whereas if you go through the planned process where you can come in and modify how do I want to say it? I'm having a real hard time talking this morning. Make it more specific to that development. Because thank you very much, Mr. Brady.
Yes and no. In one regard, we look at a particular project for what their proposed use is, but always acknowledging that, you know, unfortunately those tenants change and the next user may come in and, you know, the whole intent here is definitely to attract new businesses and jobs. Right. And so part of our process is to encourage the development of office space with every hangar that goes in, at least to be able to add that to the structure easily or within the hangar. So we want to be able to accommodate any type of use that may end up coming to that structure over its lifespan.
Well, and I hope that as we develop these standards, and maybe this is a statement for later, but it seems like since we're on it, we'll cover it. I think in the past, one of the issues that I've had with how we've approached development in Falcon Field is that we've treated each of these projects as almost being islands, as operating like in a vacuum. We haven't looked to see how a specific parcel and the development on that parcel fits in with the overall plan and the overall economic development scheme for the airport. And that's led us to make some decisions that, frankly, I don't think were consistent. While they worked great for that particular property, and if that was the only property on the airport, maybe it would work well. But when you take it in context of the overall economic activity on the airport, you see that it not only may not fit in, but it actually creates problems that we didn't anticipate. So I'm hoping that as these development standards go through, one of the things, and whether it's a guideline or whatever, is some sort of step where we take a look at how does this fit in with not only that particular the boundaries of that particular piece of property, but how does it fit in with adjoining properties and the airport as a whole. I think we can look at some of the business that had come in there very recently. And if we look beyond the rent that we would be getting or the building that would be built, we may or may not have not only allowed, but we may not have worked diligently to attract some businesses, which have turned out to create real problems.
Correct.
And have not provided the kind of, I think, overall development boost that we would have hoped for. So I don't know if that made any sense, but
it did. And in fact, you had made a statement not too long ago in this very room about the fact that Falcon Field would not look towards things like statistics of our operations or even our ranking among busiest airports in the nation, but instead would take a look at how are we being the best neighbors to the community and how are we attracting businesses and jobs.
Well, yeah, how are we attracting business? For example, I mean, the fact of the matter is that one use on an airport, if we don't think it all the way through, can really inhibit our ability to bring in other businesses.
Correct.
I mean, the reality is we need to decide, and we'll just be up front, you know, we have training facilities there now, and we need to think through these things to see long-term, how does that, can you have this type of activity and still attract the other type?
Right.
If we really want to develop high-end business jet use, for example, will they come if we're having this other type of activity? And I don't think in the past that we've really gone through that step to look at that.
And that has been part of the inspiration of this document, actually. I think you'll be pleased with some of the steps that we're looking to take as far as limiting overall office area to a certain percentage of the total building construction. that sort of thing, which would be great tools to reach that very goal that you're talking about.
Yeah, I just hope that, and I know we can't plan for the next and the next user, but we can certainly set the stage and create some overall objectives that says this, you know, and I'm not sure what our real long-term business plan is for Falcon, for example. Mm-hmm. Because I know that, once again, we look at the business model, and Falcon is self-supporting, does a great job in that, but we need to go beyond what we get per square foot in rental space from real estate. And I hope that through these the development of these new standards, that we go a step further and see how those fit in with the long-term business. Because if we truly are a reliever airport, you know, I know people from Scottsdale Airport, for example, have migrated over to Falcon because with the completion of the freeways and the fact that Scottsdale is basically filled up. But I also know some people who say, I won't take my biz jet over there. You know, I'll take my Piper. I'll take my, you know, it might be a twin, but they're reluctant to take that other step because they're unsure as to what Falcon really is. Great airport, by the way. We do an awesome job at Falcon. And as a pilot, I can tell you, flying all around the western U.S., Falcon is a gem. But I don't know from an economic development that it's really clear out there in the business community what Falcon, what Falcon's vision is, what its dream is. And, you know, if we can't sell those kind of operators or can't get them clear as to where we want to head, then the individual development of parcels is not going to ever jive. It's not going to get
it. It won't gel. Exactly. Okay. So.
Vice Mayor.
I don't know what if the mayor doesn't know what the economic development picture is for the airport, I would, then that's disturbing. Is it fair to say, though, that this PAD, yeah, he's a pilot, and he knows it's
but the fact that you've said that I may be disturbed is
he slipped.
It's okay. Usually I just do that off camera.
Usually,
not always. Fair to say that with this PAD, what we're trying to do is remove these things that are, I'm going to use a pun here, tying down the airport. He'll get it. Mm-hmm. Tying down the airport and opening up to allow the market to have its way at the airport and create a clearer picture of
it
what
will.
Potential is.
That's the direction, is to try to give clear, defined direction to developers of what our vision or what our goal is for the airport, most definitely. And, you know, it's a fact. Many developers would love to come in and put up a metal box with big doors and call that their development. And we're looking for something more. We as a city, I think, going to the mayor's point, we want to see how that matches with other developments down the street or the airport as a whole. Yeah, and so that's exactly what we're looking to do.
We've used the PAD to try to get to help developers create something better on their parcels. I don't see why we shouldn't overlay the airport with the same opportunity and let this airport really take off. I'm trying to get this meeting over.
Councilmember Fenter.
Just a quick, I noticed the three zones and not getting down into the weeds of it right now, as Councilmember Richens would say. That area west of Greenfield, the orchards, the potential that's there, and I know there's been those little strip portion that's south of McKellops but west of Greenfield. It would be nice, whatever tools you need, you know, let us know, and, you know, and I know there's a lot of, is it FAA requirements and things that have to be met along those lines, and it would be nice to see some action or if there's a need and as we come out of this recession to have things in place so people can come in. We have the freeway there now. We have a lot of things popping out there. So
sure.
Whatever tools you need, I hope you feel comfortable coming and asking it.
We do, and we are moving that direction. Obviously, we're hoping everything turns around and we can lease all that property. A good portion of it has been released from the FAA for commercial development already, the exact northwest corner of McKellops and Greenfield, but further to the north. So that is a possibility, you know, while always keeping our runway safety zones in mind. But Laura will speak a little bit more to forward movement. While this PAD is specific to the basic square mile of Falcon Field, we do have future plans on the other property as well. So I'll turn it over to Laura.
what we've been
you
doing.
You can pause on that picture for a little while because that is a really cool
isn't
picture.
Isn't that an incredible
picture?
I don't
know who took that.
And I put this in the presentation because I wanted to emphasize that we're really looking at development standards from the airport from a different perspective. It really is about aviation uses and what those uses need in terms of development standards. We have been working with a group of airport tenants, business owners, and museum representatives to we've been working collaboratively to talk about the development standards and design guidelines that are appropriate for aviation uses. These development standards and design guidelines will be part of this planned area development overlay, which is a zoning district that we refer to as the PAD. The work group agreed that when people arrive at Falcon Field Airport, we really want to create a sense that this is a special place. So this work group has defined what makes Falcon Field special, what improvements can be made to the airport to give it that sense of arrival and as a special place, and also make it easy for businesses to set up their operations there. We talked about landscaping and signage, building design and lighting. These conversations that we had with the work group really was the outline and the foundation for the PAD. The goals and what we would really like to accomplish with the PAD is to provide a positive aviation business environment, enhance the appearance of the airport, encourage economic development that complements the surrounding area, and a number of you have mentioned that this morning, and to provide a welcoming feel for airport tenants and visitors. This is part of the community. We want to make it a welcoming place for people to come with their families. The PAD will apply, as Councilman Finter mentioned, to development within the boundaries of the airport itself. It won't apply to the airport-owned property west of Greenfield. It will apply to new leases and exterior renovations, and we're looking at how it might apply to lease assignments and extensions.
On that latter part, let's be real careful on that. I know we've had a couple of situations just recently where, and I think the efforts were well-intentioned, but you had an existing business who was coming in for a lease extension. We wanted them to upgrade their facilities, and we really struggled with finding that balance as to what we would require to upgrade facilities while not basically killing the business. You know, we can't do that. Our efforts should be focused on helping businesses to succeed in this area. And the way we can do it is I think that actually elevating standards is a good way to help businesses succeed, believe it or not. But I also believe that as we elevate standards, it places a responsibility back on us to do the best we can to create a regulatory framework that allows those businesses to and facilitates those businesses. Oh, I'm sorry, Councilmember Kavanaugh. Those businesses attaining those standards. And I know we in a couple of situations that I got involved with where we really struggled with finding that balance. And sometimes that is tough, especially when you have an extension that's a long-term extension, and you want to improve something because, frankly, a lot of those buildings are old. A lot of those businesses have operated under a model that was just fine at Falcon for decades. Well, we're moving into a new era, and making that transition, I think, is going to be one of our challenges. So I hope that on that last one, as we come up with something, we develop the kind of flexibility where we can work with businesses and remember that our primary focus is not to make them put a nice facade on their building. It is to help them to succeed as businesses, because we'll have a lot of empty buildings with nice facades on if we don't do that. And that's a reality. And sometimes we're real good at doing that as government. And I hope we find that balance.
We agree with you on that one, and I hope we find it as well. We feel that there will be benefits for the city with this PAD, but as you mentioned, also business owners and airport tenants will find some benefits with this PAD. It will establish airport-specific development standards that will reduce the need for variances that were mentioned earlier. This will save both time and expense and frustration. It will implement the Falcon Field sub-area plan design guidelines that this council looked at a number of years ago, and really achieve those design quality objectives of that plan. And it will provide consistent direction for new development and redevelopment. It establishes a coordinated review process for planning and for the airport staff. It establishes criteria to ensure that each project is constructed to accommodate an aviation business now and in the future. It's very important that development at the airport really supports the vision of the airport. It establishes guidelines for aeronautical use that's consistent with the FAA requirements. That's defined in the PAD. It limits the office space to 25% of the total building square footage. It goes back to one of the earlier comments. So the process that we're utilizing for this is it's a collaborative effort between planning and the airport staff and this work group. We've met with the work group four times, and they've really given us a lot of time and their thoughts about what needs to be part of this PAD. After we come to council today, we'll go back to the work group next week, and we'll be posting a draft copy of the PAD that's been developed so far on the airport website with contact information. So if people are interested in making comments about that PAD, they can contact us. We will. The airport is setting up a number of tenant meetings to go through the PAD line by line and get their feedback and their input. We're going to schedule two neighborhood meetings, tentatively scheduled for the 21st and 24th of March. We'll be sending letters to all property owners within 1,000 feet of the airport and the registered neighborhoods within a half mile of the airport. When those meetings are complete and we've incorporated the input that they've provided, we plan to take this to the Planning and Zoning Board April 20th and then forward to council.
Laura, the council member Higgins has a question.
Just back on the ancillary office space, if a developer actually wanted to put a second story in so that the whole ground floor was hangar space and the second floor was office space, would they have the opportunity to do that? I know that would be a great expense, but if they're willing to, you know what I'm saying? I understand why we have this, but if someone came in with a project like that, I wouldn't want to say, oh, no, you can't build that 100,000 second floor, you know, because... So will we have the opportunity to look?
I'm sure that comment will come up as we have the public meetings and developers weigh in on it. That will be a tough balancing act because, unfortunately, large open meeting rooms seem more conducive to training and that sort of activity. So we were trying to come up with a ratio of hangar to office space that would still accommodate businesses that are wanting to operate there, somewhat try to restrict what that end use.
Well, and it's really hard on a site plan, and this is where I think you do need to use the site plan site limitations, to have that much more office space and accommodate parking on site.
Correct.
And so what happens is that if you're going to have that big thing, you're going to have to go off site, and we see that now even with with CAE. They're parking. You know, they had to build another parking facility across the street to accommodate activity. Now, that may be desirable in certain instances, but I don't think it should be the norm. I think it right. should be the exception. We should look at it very carefully to see if that's what we want to do. Do we want to allow them to go off site? And if that fits in with the overall plan, once again, that's maybe something we'll say, yeah, as long as this plan gives us the flexibility, if we can exceed that or go that way, that's fine. But and once again, I think there's some natural limitations as long as we let those play out.
Exactly.
So that it forces us to really look hard at what we're going to do if we do want to add that second story.
Mm-hmm. And what the PAD is really start to delineate some of those objectives that we're trying to create in terms of office space, the relationship to hangars.
And I hope, if I might interject, I hope that some of the things like you said, the objectives... And I hope that on an overall basis that we specifically state those in the plan. I know sometimes we get very, and you can't avoid it. This is a development guideline. This is going to be ordinance basically, and so it's hard sometimes to not create an ordinance that doesn't really look like an ordinance. That's sort of say, but sometimes I think we need to state an overall vision in that ordinance. I know, for example, at Gateway, one of the primary things we did in creating that planning process is we put the burden back on the developer to show how their development fit in with the overall economic plan of Gateway area. Mm-hmm. And I found just in the meetings I've had with potential developers how useful that's been. because the historic way or the normal way that developers come in to respond or to put a development in is they look at the rules, which is included in the zoning ordinance or the PAD or whatever it is, overlay, and then they develop that and they come and say, here it is, now city, you say yes or no. You know, that's not a great way to get high-quality development. A lot of times we need to state, here's our objective, here's what you need to shoot for as you're complying with these regulations. You need to keep these larger things. And, for example, if you're going to come into Falcon Field, I like the same approach of you're going to need to show us how your business model fits in with our overall vision for the airport. Now, granted, we need to spell that out, what that is a little bit, to be fair to the developer, but I think it should be on the developer to come in and show how their business is more than just a parcel. Mm-hmm. And so if you could include a little bit, whether it be in the prologue or somewhere in the document, that maybe follows what the approach we've taken out at Gateway, which is, listen, we have an overall vision. We know what we want to accomplish in the entire, in the area. And in this case, it's a much more refined area because we're talking about the airport property mm-hmm. proper. We want your development to succeed, but we also want it to fit in with the long term. And you're gonna that's gonna be up to you to show us how that fits in, so we can work together to see if this works. If somehow we can accomplish that in this document, and I hope I didn't make your task hugely more complex. I don't think it is.
No,
I think that once again, as we put in the prologue or the intro or whatever, say here's what we're trying to accomplish with the rules that follow, which we don't do. A lot of times we just state rules and we assume that people figure it out. And I tell you, they don't.
Right.
They don't think that way because that's not how it's been done in the past. If we could do that, I'd appreciate that. Is that too much to ask?
Nope, not too much at all. I think that will make a very useful document for people that want to develop at the airport, actually, and the city. When we were working with the Rupert Group, I think somebody mentioned it a little bit earlier, the airport really is connected through runways and taxi lanes. It's very connected, airside. Landside, outside the security fence, the streets are disconnected, and the airport kind of breaks itself into three zones. The work group wanted the whole airport to have a feeling of a single place, but it understood that these three zones have developed over different times and they have different characteristics. Zone 1, which is located along the southern portion of the airport, it's accessed from McKellips, is where the historic structures are on the airport, the hangars from World War II, their plans in the airport master plan to put a new terminal between those two hangars. The park is there. It's really a people place. It's a place the community will come. So the work group envisioned that might have an old town Main Street feel, people being able to get up and walk around and go to an observation deck and look at airplanes take off and land and get excited about aviation in their community. Shade, tree-lined streets with lots of shade and color, vintage architecture that was reminiscent of what you might find in the 40s. I think John Manross's Desert Jet Center out there does that. It faces McKellips. He built that curved parapet, which, you know, is reminiscent of that curved form of the hangars. Zone 1 development in that area would pick up those characteristics. Zone 2 is accessed from Higley Road. It contains a lot of existing buildings that have been mentioned earlier, and there's also some vacant land. That's seen as more of a modest contemporary architectural area. The picture on the left is interesting in that it is a canopy that's been added to an existing building. And that's the idea there, that you may have a building, a hangar building, built decades ago, but it's still structurally sound and very useful. What can you do to enhance it that isn't economically burdensome? And adding these canopy structures and making it a little more attractive will help the airport as a whole. And then on the left is a brand new building with that curved form again in there, that being the theme that ties this together. Landscaping in this area, because it's the gateway to Tonto National Forest and the Sonoran Desert, is envisioned to be desert landscaping, low water use. Not sparse, but lush. Incorporate boulders and color and the textures of the wonderful Sonoran landscape. The third zone is located in the northwest quadrant of the airport. There are a few projects there, but on the whole, there's a lot of vacant land, and there's really an opportunity to push the envelope, create a contemporary architectural theme,
desert tech character, and then also the desert landscaping in that area as well. There's some examples here of projects that have been built, again, incorporating the curved building forms, but also taking standard building materials and using them in innovative ways. That speaks to private development and the design guidelines that are in the document related to that. There are also some city-funded improvements at the airport.
Right. Some of the city-funded improvements that we would consider when funding does again become available would be things like new entrance features for the different entrances off of McKellips-Higley and Greenfield Roads, landscaping enhancements within Falcon Field Park and along the roadways within the airport, and plans for a future new terminal building in the World War II hangar area as funding becomes available.
Councilman Finter.
As funding becomes available, interesting. I remember as I was making so many friends challenging some of the things that go on in the city, it seems like there was quite a substantial fund. It's an enterprise fund tied directly to Gateway and can only be used there for a lot of different reasons, and I understand that completely. So where's the plan for that fund? And when you say funds come available, capital funds, are you talking about other types of funds?
I'm talking about capital funds, and funding is available right now if we spend down all of our reserve, which we've definitely been directed not to do. So we're holding a line as far as the reserves.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'd never encourage spending down the reserve, but I remember it was millions, like $6 million the last time I
and
looked at it.
We have spent considerable funds in recent years to bring forward some of the, you know, our share of some of the capital projects for the infrastructure on the airport, but also some pavement preservation that's been done. With the help of the Transportation Department, we've gotten a new pavement preservation plan now in place that we can consistently budget a fixed number for years out for that so that we can maintain that city asset.
Okay. Yeah, it'd be nice to maybe we'll get it through audit and finance, kind of see what your plans are and where that money goes. Thanks.
Okay.
And just so we're clear, the source of your capital plans is?
The source for our capital improvements on the airport are FAA funding and state funding when it is available.
And the city's portion of that is?
Our city portion on a federally funded project is 2.5%, which is matched.
Well, what I mean is the source of those funds.
The source of those funds are revenues generated from the airport.
That's what I wanted to make clear. Yeah, we don't take money from one area in the city and put it into Falcon Field.
We do not draw from the city's general fund.
As a matter of fact, last year they're picking up a larger portion, and what's drawing down their fund balance is they're picking up a large portion of the fire services out there now.
Correct.
And I just want to make clear that our airport is not only self-supporting, but it self-supports not only on an operational basis, but it self-supports on a capital basis also.
Yes, it does.
Councilman Higgins.
I just wanted to point out that you guys were actually moving ahead with a plan on some of these things, like the branding and landscape, and then we decided to – so there was actually money – that was already allocated for some projects, and then we backed off so we could allow this plan to go through and do a cohesive plan.
Much of the design and ideas are in place of what we would like to do with that.
Right.
Yes.
Well, so I just was going to point out to Councilmember Finter that we actually had some of this money already allocated for some of these, and then we decided to wait and hold off till Laura finished the whole comprehensive design plan for the area.
Well, and the other thing is that because there are federal and state monies involved, there are very serious restrictions as to what we can do as it relates to specific airport. You know, the security fence that went around, that was a joint project funded a lot by FAA.
Yes, sir.
Because the FAA was basically the ones that required that we put the security fence up.
Exactly.
You know, some of the changes to the taxiways and the roads and those kind of things, which were safety related to keep, you know, cars and airplanes don't really mix.
Correct.
Keep those up. Those were funded out of this funding mechanism, which involves a lot of state and federal money. But it also, once again, comes from the airport, is self-contained in the airport, and the airport more than pays for itself.
Exactly. And the fence is a good example. While it was federally funded, they would only fund to a certain height, certain color, certain type of fence. So city funds were used from the airport to enhance that as far as...
In other words, they would fund an ugly fence.
Yes, they would, with barbed wire if they wanted to. So we pitched in and used city funds, airport funding, to enhance that fence and make it more appealing as much as can be. down with the chain link fence.
As much as we can.
Hello. Just why you just said that? Can you that why you mentioned it? I thought we'd just throw out the reason the fence is up there is really to.
The fence was. I'm
go ahead. No, you go ahead.
At one time, Falcon Field was very high in the nation as far as number of runway incursions. An incursion is where an aircraft or a car or a pedestrian ends up where it shouldn't be. And that's
that's important because even some local media have somehow believed that we're creating a TSA kind of a secured site. And that's not really the primary purpose of that fence.
We have always stressed that this is not a security fence. This is an access control fence.
Well, we've stressed it, but that message has had a hard time getting out.
Sure.
And it's really to only keep those people that have airport business to keep those
accessing
people.
Accessing airport, right.
It's to provide ways for those people who have specific airport business to get on the airport.
Right.
And those people who don't have specific to not go on the airport because, frankly, they have a tendency to drive in front of airplanes and runways and taxiways and things like that.
Right.
And the way that Falcon Field has developed, there is a lot of integration between vehicular traffic once you get in the ramp area and runway and taxiways. And if you don't know where you're going, you can easily be right in the middle of the taxiway.
Right.
So it's to stop those incursions.
Correct.
Okay.
Plans also include repainting and adding some descriptors to the Blue Water Tower, which is airport property, as well as repainting our T-hangers. And we had thrown around the ideas of different ways that we might commemorate some of the cadets who gave the ultimate sacrifice at Falcon Field on some of those T-hangers, maybe some signage and things. So we'll be looking at that in the future. As also new wayfinding and signage within the airport. We believe that once completed and with implementation of this planned area development overlay, it will ensure future development and redevelopment of Falcon Field will continue to elevate the airport's image, which in turn will help attract new aviation businesses and jobs to the city of Mesa. Any questions?
Any questions? Yeah, Councilmember Richards.
I remember during the discussion of the Falcon Field master plan, there was some discussion about the Falcon Field Park as a potential development site. Is that still the intent in the development standard?
The intent of the park is to remain as a park. That was the direction I think that we were given at that time. Mm-hmm. And at one time, part of the park was looked at for potential development. I think that that plan has been backed off. We've looked and entertained maybe a different approach to the park with Fighter Aces Drive. And so there's been some designs looked at as far as reconfiguring the approach to the park, but the park has to remain. We recognize that. It gets a lot of use, and it's an integral part of the history of the entire area. So we would actually look to maybe enhance the park.
The work group was very supportive of preserving that park and enhancing that park and letting it really be continue to be part of the community.
Well, and it works out that the development that could take place there really isn't because of the location and the access and everything, it really lends itself to more of a public area. And the, like you said, that park is used more than you'd imagine. I go out there on the weekends, and almost every weekend the Ramadas are full, and there's a lot of use of that park.
We have to have a place to hold our open house.
Hey, that's a good idea.
Which is April the 2nd.
Jim, what day was that? Can you repeat
from 10
that?
O'clock to 2
April 2nd, 9 to 3.
9 to 3,
okay.
Lots of activities. Come on out.
Any other questions? Thank you.
We appreciate your input.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Next item is to acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. I have a motion from the Vice Mayor, second Councilmember Higgins. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Yes. Any opposed? Hear reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Nada. Good. Oh, Councilmember Higgins.
Just that I attended the Flint Foundation Bioscience Roadmap Steering Committee yesterday and had an update on the Banner Alzheimer's Research Center that's happening. I'd like you all to go to the Flint Foundation
website.
Remember
what they said?
I did, because the work that the Banner Alzheimer Research Center is doing is, it's one of those things that you watch and you just go, oh, I can't believe it's happening. It's just amazing. Shortening trials, doing brain imaging, DNA markers to find out who is susceptible to, so you can start treating Alzheimer's before you get it. It was really cool.
Good.
And, you know, Banner, hometown, big business. So very exciting. And, again, the Flynn Foundation website has a great PowerPoint presentation that you guys can see. It really is amazing, groundbreaking technology happening right here in the Valley. Love it. Okay.
All right. Anything else? I had the opportunity yesterday to go out to Taft Elementary in East Mesa.
Me too.
You were there too? You were there. Okay. Oh, yeah. And read to the elementary students. It was National Reading Day because it was Dr. Seuss's birthday. So I got to read my favorite Dr. Seuss, Horton Hatches the Egg. And I want you to remember one thing. If you learn nothing else in life, remember, I meant what I said, and I said what I meant. An elephant's faithful, 100%. You can take that to the bank, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. The kids had it memorized by the time I was gone, and they were like kindergartners, so it was good. It was a fun day. Thank you for the invite of Taft Elementary, a great place out there. Okay, anything else? All righty, Mr. Brady.
Just a reminder, we have the council meeting on Monday, preceded by a Sustainability and Transportation Committee meeting at 3:30. And then we have our next study session will be March 10th, and that'll be followed by an Audit and Finance Committee meeting.
Okay. Ms. Crocker, do we have any requests to speak?
Request, Mayor.
All right. If there's nothing else, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. From Vice Mayor Summers, second by Councilmember Kavanaugh. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. We are adjourned.